Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Stephen M. Gillen. He is the author of the brand new book, America's Reluctant Prince, The Life of John F. Kennedy Jr. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Dutton. It is really a fantastic biography of the son of our 35th president, JFK Jr. And Stephen, you come at this from a different angle other than a lot of historians that write books. You had this personal connection. You knew JFK Jr. So take me back to when you first met him. What were those circumstances?
Sure. So I was a teaching assistant at Brown University in a class in modern American political history. And John enrolled in the class. And I, before I knew he was in the class, I offered to give a lecture on the Kennedy presidency. So my first example of public speaking, I was in front of a classroom at Brown University with 120 bright students and the son of the person who I'm talking about sitting 10 feet away from me. So I gave the lecture, and John, it was a critical lecture, but John liked it. And that was his sophomore year at Brown. I didn't see much of him his junior year, and then his senior year, we just started working out together. You know, we both were frustrated athletes, and that's where we bonded that year. We joined a gym in Seekonk, Massachusetts, which is about a 20-minute drive from the Brown campus. And like once, maybe twice a week, we'd hop in his little blue Honda, and we'd go over there, and we'd play these vicious games of racquetball. It gave me a sense of what the football games were like in Hyannis. And then we'd lift weights, and then we'd eat something. We'd go get something to eat, and we just spent a lot of time talking. We stayed in touch ever since. I mean, for the next 18 years, I worked with him at George. I used to write some of his speeches. I used to write some of his letters from the editor. But I got to know him well and got a sense of the many different dimensions to his personality. And that's what I really try to bring out in the book, is that John was a complicated person.
How far apart in age were the two of you?
4 years. I was 4 years older than John.
All right, so basically the same generation, but as you knew him and started to get to know him, I can't imagine knowing somebody like him without just every time I see him thinking, my God, this is JFK Jr. Did that ever wear off from you as you would get to know him and you just knew him as John?
You know, the thing about John is when you get to know him, you really do just think of him as John, and you forget all the other stuff. You're only reminded of it when you're in public. And you see how other people respond to him. And there are so many times when I was just startled. I would think to myself, why are all these people staring at John? I'm like, oh, right, of course. But you, in order to be John's friend, you have to get to that point where you see him as the person he is. You know, John once told me that he was two people, that he was just John, you know, a typical privileged member of his generation. But he had a role to play his entire life, and that role was as John Fitzgerald Kennedy Jr., the son of a beloved slain president. And in order to be friends with John and genuine friends, you had to embrace the John part and put aside the role that he played.
It seems like everybody always expected so much of him, whether they knew him or not, and that's what happens. But how much of that do you think was attributable to the fact that his name he actually shared with his father? If he'd have been named Harold or anything else, do you think it would have had that same pressure?
That's a great question. You know, I know Jackie, John's mom, later regretted naming him after his father because she thought exactly that it just added to the burden on John. So, yeah, it was just everything. You know, I think that it's that salute, you know, the famous picture of November 25th, 1963, was John's third birthday, where he raises his right hand and salutes his father's casket. I think at that moment, all these unfulfilled hopes and expectations of the Kennedy presidency transferred to John. I think John grew up with these expectations that he was going to be the heir apparent to Camelot, and he was the one who's going to enter public life and bring us back to the idealism of the early 1960s. And I think that was going to be present whether his name was John, Henry, or Tony.
As you talk to him, and maybe he didn't talk about this, but he was only three at that funeral. I mean, what memories of his father did he have?
Very few. There's this... I spoke to Michael Berman, who was John's friend and business partner for some 10 years, and he told me about the first time he had lunch with Johns. And they walked into a restaurant, and Berman looks around, and everybody's staring at John. So he said to John, "It must be really odd for you. You don't know a soul in this restaurant, but everybody knows you." And John said, "That's not the weird part. The really difficult part for me is that they remember and I don't." So John had very few memories of his father. And, you know, he once told me that he couldn't tell. He had seen so many pictures of his father that he couldn't tell what were his real memories and what were photographs that he had just seen over the years.
Well, and that's another thing I was wondering, because the famous picture of him under the desk in the Oval Office or the salute, did he have any independent memories of those? He was way too young to do that.
No, he doesn't have. He had no memories of the salute. And he told me that the reason why he played under the desk was because his mom would not allow him to chew gum in the White House. And if he went to the Oval Office, his father would give him a stick of gum, but under the condition that he chewed it under the desk, so his mother, if she came in, she wouldn't see him.
It seems like so many people, when they die, and whether it's a tragedy like the JFK assassination or just anybody else in our life, for regular people like us, these people are just wiped off the planet, and you know, there's oral history of families talking about it. With John F. Kennedy Jr.'s family, there's books upon books and movies and all of that stuff. What's that like for him what was it like for him as he's growing into an adult to be able to read about anything he wants about his family members when the rest of us have to rely on stories passed down?
So it is interesting, and John read a lot of that stuff. One of the things that surprised me when I first got to know him was how well-read he was in his father's presidency. And so he, as he was growing up, members of his father's administration used to sit down with him and tell him stories about his father because they wanted him to know who he was. So, you know, he would talk to Robert McNamara about the Vietnam War and Dave Powers about, and Kenny O'Donnell about politics. So he was exceptionally well-read in these things. And at one point, I remember the Seymour Hersh book came out. I think it's called The Dark Side of Camelot. And it was a really scathing critique of President Kennedy. And I remember John was upset about it. And he said to me, "You know, is this, do you think people are going to turn on Daddy?" And he was worried that as some of these accounts came out about his father's personal life, that they would change the way people viewed him. So John was a student of history, and he was a student of his father's presidency.
Was he a student of all presidencies, or was it in particular his father's?
Yeah, John was, he obviously had a special interest in his father's presidency, but he was pretty well read in the presidency. The things that I remember really got him excited were the presidency in general, not just his father's, the Supreme Court, and civil rights. They were the three issues that he got most animated when speaking about.
Another thing I found interesting in the book was about this whole idea with the Secret Service, and you go into great detail, and you took pains just to get a lot of the documents about it. So take me through what Jackie and John's relationship was with the Secret Service.
Sure. So the reason I was able to write about it was that I sued the Secret Service, and as part of the settlement, they turned over some 500 pages of documents. And what I was shocked by was the tension between Jackie and the Secret Service over how to protect John. And it begins in 1961 and goes right up until 1976. And Jackie did not want John to ever turn around and see a Secret Service agent. They, in turn, said their job was to protect John, so they needed to form a bubble around him. And this went back and forth for all these years. And then when John was, when he had his bike stolen in Central Park, it really exploded. And at one point, she wrote to the Secret Service, she said, "If anything happens to John, I won't be as nice to you as I was after Dallas." So that gives you an idea of just how much tension and animosity there was in that relationship. And the Secret Service, I have all the internal memos in the Secret Service about how to deal with her. And essentially they threw their hands up and they said, "We only have to deal with her for another year or two. Let's just go on with it."
And so it runs out when he becomes an adult, right?
When he turns 16.
Okay.
16th birthday. they walk away.
So did you have any indication that he needed protection after that as you knew him?
I was never aware, and this is one of the things I discovered in doing research for the book, I was not aware of all the threats that John used to get. And I also sued the FBI and got a bunch of documents from the FBI. And in 1995, when John is launching George Magazine, there's a very credible and serious kidnapping threat against John. And, you know, John never changed his life at all. He would ride his bicycle anywhere. He'd walk down the darkest street. He never gave any consideration to his safety. John, one of the great things about John is he loved life, and he wanted to live life to the fullest. He wasn't going to allow those types of threats to impede on his desire to live life.
I'm chatting with Stephen M. Gillen about his brand new book, America's Reluctant Prince, The Life of John F. Kennedy Jr. It's available now wherever fine books are sold from the good folks at Dutton. When he took the bar exam, the stories in the book about him taking the bar exam, which is pressure enough, but he's got people peeking in the windows trying to get pictures of this. What did that experience do for him? Because I always got the feeling he didn't really want to be a lawyer, but you seem to argue something else in the book.
Well, he wanted to pass the bar.
Yeah. Okay.
He didn't want to be a practicing lawyer, but he wanted to have the law degree because it would be valuable in whatever it is he decided to do. And at the time, he wasn't really sure what he wanted to do. But that bar exam, especially the second one, was devastating to John. I mean, after he failed the second time, he took a bottle, I think it was Jack Daniels, and went up to some cabin in the woods and spent a weekend and didn't talk to anyone or see anyone. And that's the thing about John is, you know, John was like the rest of us. You know, we think of him as being just famous and wealthy and, you know, somewhat good-looking. But and he was all those things, but he was also a complicated person who had the same kind of emotions we do, and he was devastated by that bar exam. And what they ended up doing for the third time was they allowed him to take the bar exam by himself in a secret location, because what they were concerned about is not just John, but all the other people taking the bar exam at that time. They walked through a gauntlet of paparazzi. They're having their photographs taken. The paparazzi are trying to put their cameras in the windows to take pictures of John while he's taking the exam. So it interrupted everybody who was trying to take the bar those two times.
That was an unbelievable story to me from this. But, you know, as he got older and his relationship with Caroline got a little bit strained, and it had a lot to do with Ed Schlossberg. What was the genesis of that? Not really a feud, but it was just some discomfort.
Yeah, there was tension between John and Ed, and I think it was the personality thing. John found Ed to be arrogant and dismissive of him. But there were a couple of incidents where it really blew up, and probably the biggest one had to do with the auction of Mrs. Kennedy, Mrs. Onassis' estate, where John wanted to have a private auction that would not be so much in the news, and Ed decided that they needed to have a public auction, and all the attention would actually increase prices. They needed to raise money in order to pay the taxes on the Martha's Vineyard estate. And John, he resented that Ed was making these decisions. John believed in bloodlines, and while they were both married, he believed that only he and Caroline were real Kennedys, that the two of them should be making these decisions, and these decisions should not be delegated to spouses. And then there were a series of other incidents like that that just created a real wedge between John, certainly between John and Ed, and between John and his sister. Although I should point out that the day before John went on that fateful trip on July 16th, 1999, he called his sister, and they had a really nice conversation. And he told her they agreed that they would do a better job in staying in touch.
You know, something that as I read throughout the whole book, as I was kept thinking about, John seemed to be so involved in wanting to make a difference. I know he had aspirations for politics, the White House, basically governance, George Magazine, getting his law degree. He was John F. Kennedy Jr. Couldn't he have just walked in anywhere and he would have had any number of amount of jobs thrown at him that people would want him on boards or things like that? Or was it not that way with him?
No, John could have had any job that he wanted. But John, one of John's big issues is he did not want to get things based solely on his name. He wanted to earn it. And so that's why John worked so hard. I mean, he spent, 4 years in the DA's office? When he started George Magazine, he's in there day and night with the staff putting this magazine together. And that's what a lot of the people with the magazine would say, is that why is he doing this? Why is he in here at midnight, you know, choosing colors for the color for the cover of the magazine, when he could be out doing anything he wanted? And John wanted to work for what he got. He did not want things handed to him. And that's a real credit to his character and his personality.
I know a lot of people, well, it's kind of a cliche now, that say, I remember where I was when I heard that John F. Kennedy died or was shot. Is that like you? Is it that way for you as a friend of his, that you remember the moment you heard about the plane crash?
Yeah. I mean, and 20 years later, it's still painful to talk about. I remember the week. You know, it began with that Saturday morning phone call, and then it continued through the entire week. I flew to New York. I was living in Oklahoma at the time, and I flew to New York, and there were all these private gatherings throughout the week, and then it sort of, you know, it ended with the memorial service on Friday. And one of my most vivid images of that day was after the service, we walked out of the church, and there was a reception at a Sacred Heart convent just a few blocks away. And it was a hot, steamy day. It must have been, you know, 90 degrees, 90% humidity. And we're walking down this street that had all been blocked off, and there are hundreds and hundreds of people standing there paying their respects. And I remember walking and thinking, yeah, you really were special. You really were special.
Well, this is just an amazing insight into this man's life. And like I say, you come at it from a totally different perspective as a historian just reading documents. You actually knew the man. It's America's Reluctant Prince, The Life of John F. Kennedy Jr. by Stephen M. Gillen. I know there's plenty of press about this. People Magazine excerpted it. A&E's biography is going to be showing stuff about it. So this has got a huge rollout. Stephen, just a fantastic insight into JFK Jr., and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Now I'll be